I'll just say today is Jan. Apparently this was off for a few minutes. It's January 30th. We're beginning the mitzvah of Achilas HaPesach, the sixth mitzvah, the mitzvah of eating Pesach. We mentioned that the Mishnah says that the purpose is because Hashem was Pasach Hamokem Al Batei Aviseinu, because the Rebbeinu Shalom skipped over from one to the other. And we also mentioned that Rashi in Chumash brings down two explanations of the word Pesach, not just Passover or skip over, but the other one is that Hashem was merciful. The explanation we gave is, what does it mean Hashem is merciful? Chazal tell us that during the time of Makas Bechiris, the death of the firstborn, the Rebbeinu Shalom sent out a malach, and our firstborns were saved, and therefore because of that we have the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, that on the 30th day a child, the oldest child, and so on. And the question is, the Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't kill people that don't deserve it, if they didn't deserve to be killed, so what does it mean? They weren't in a... And the story we said over was from Rav Bick. Someone asked him if he was missed, a car missed him by a hair's breadth, does he have to make a bracha, a gaimel, and to thank Hashem. And he said, well, if your pants were on the clothesline and they fell down, would you then have to make a gaimel? Because if you had been there in the pants, you would have been hurt. A potential danger is not a reason to make a bracha. That's what he said. But the idea is, if the Rebbeinu Shalom was killing people, he knows the difference between this one and this one. If this one deserves, this one doesn't deserve. So we quoted the Rashi, it brings down the Chazal. Rashi and Chumash tells us that the Rebbeinu Shalom sent out the Malach HaMoves, and when the Malach HaMoves goes out, when the Mashchis goes out, the destructive angel, it is, he has the right to kill Tzaddik in Russia. My interpretation of Tzaddik in Russia is, again, I don't remember if I've seen this somewhere, but the interpretation of Tzaddik in Russia means those, not people that are absolutely innocent, but people that really deserve to die, but under normal circumstances, Hashem would extend them extra time for the purpose of doing tshuva. Once the Malach HaMoves, the Mashchis, the destructive angel, is going out to kill the people who deserve, whose time is up, but regardless, he has permission sometimes to take even people who should normally be considered not tzaddikim, it means that they would normally be allowed to live. They're not ready to die yet, but in this case, Hashem will take them anyway. Hashem will tell the Malach HaMoves to take them anyway. So how were we saved? Let me just explain this a little more clearly. How are we saved? Really, once the Malach HaMoves goes out, he should really take some of the people that are would have otherwise had extra time. Instead, by the merit of the mitzvah, putting the dam of the Pesach, the blood of the Pesach on the doorpost, Hashem gave us extra mercy. That's the V'chomal. That's what Rashi's saying. V'chomal, Hashem had mercy on us. And he saved our firstborns. Yes, Rabbeinu Yaakov.
So the Jews who didn't make it out, the so-called era of Rav, or the Jews who were, was there...
In the four-fifths, you mean?
Yes. Is this Chazal bring down that they were shown mercy in this regard, and they were able to be saved from, of course, the death of the firstborn, the Jews? Jews who made it out and the Jews who did not make it out, to what extent did they, is there any discussion of how they were treated when all this was going on? When the angel of death shows up, you've got the...
Well, chronologically that happened before the Makas Choshech, during which they died. They died, the four-fifths died in the plague of darkness. They were totally out of they were in the dark.
That was just a couple of days before.
Hashem specifically did it during the Makkah of Choshech so that the Mitzrayim shouldn't see and say, ah, you see, the Jews are dying too. In fact, more people from the Jews, right?
Right.
Four-fifths of a nation, ratio-wise, is quite a number. Yes. Try to imagine the magnitude of that kind of tragedy. In Klal Yisrael, I think we had a discussion about that. Yes, Rabbi Yaakov.
Yeah, so that answers the question. The other question is that my understanding that Chazal brings down, I can't cite, I'd be interested to know what is stated, but that sometimes tzaddikim, so to speak, take one for the team. In other words, the angel of death is let loose, the rain falls on the just and unjust alike, and you'll see the great tzaddik, you know, because I do something wrong, the tzaddik slips. Hashem, for whatever reason, says that, well, you know, he'll, more people will get the message if he slips than if I slip. Who cares if I slip?
Right. This is absolutely correct. But the main point is here, the different manifestations, the same idea, which is that there's nothing that happens without a specific calculation. It doesn't mean, it would seem from Chazal, like Hashem sends out the, whichever way you understand it, Hashem sends out the angel, the destructive angel, and he just, you know, he just recklessly just destroys everything, whether they deserve it or not. That notion, I find it hard to believe that that's what Chazal is saying. Chazal is saying maybe perhaps people who otherwise would not have had to suffer or been taken away because of other circumstances would be taken away. Whether it's because, like you're saying, he's doing taking one for the team, or it's because, like I'm saying, he would anyway deserve, he's not a true tzaddik, it means just that under normal circumstances he would be allowed to continue to live.
Although, in the Battle of Ai, you know, we lost 36 soldiers, and Achan, you know, because of his sin, these 36 people lost their lives.
But I'm just saying it's not without specific calculation, without deliberate account of each thing. Why the Rebbeinu Shlom chooses to take a tzaddik for the entire nation is a whole different discussion. But the fact is, it doesn't just happen at random. That's the point. Okay. But I'm just I'm using my pshat more than your pshat, Yaakov, because my pshat fits very well into the idea that Hashem, that Rashi interprets the word pasach, that the Rebbeinu Shlom had compassion. He really did have to have compassion. There were people in Klal Yisrael that were only able to stay alive because of the fact that of the compassion of the Rebbeinu Shlom. Not because anytime Hashem says, again, this is my interpretation, anytime Hashem sends a mashchis, he kills anything and destroys anything, but rather some of them really truly deserve to die if not for the mercy of Hashem. Hashem exercised that extra mercy. Why? Oftentimes he'll exercise it because the person has things to accomplish. He can do tshuva, he can, whatever it may be. He may have a merit of his ancestors, whatever it may be. In this particular case, we know, Chazal tells us, it was the merit of the mitzvos of Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. As a, you know, it just reminds me of a story, a very frightening story. The founder of the Telshi Yeshiva in Europe, Reb Lazer Gordon, Reb Gifter's wife's great-grandfather, Reb Lazer Gordon, his father-in-law was a very wealthy man. And his father-in-law promised, after he got married, that he would support his new son-in-law, Reb Lazer Gordon, who was a genius of a Talmud Chacham and a tremendous tzaddik who eventually created the Telz dynasty, which exists till today. He committed to supporting his son-in-law so that his son-in-law could continue learning, eventually open a yeshiva, etc. His son-in-law and daughter actually stayed in his house. Stayed in his house for many, many years. After about 10 years, the mother-in-law, Rabbi Gordon's mother-in-law, was overheard saying the words, "How much longer will we continue to have to support them while they stay in our home and eat our food?" Now, she wasn't a simple person, obviously, but in a moment of frustration, a moment of whatever, this is what she said. And her husband said to her, "You think that you're supporting them, but who knows who's supporting who?" And the next morning, he had no choice then, I believe, to tell his son-in-law that, you know, they have to go out on their own. 10 years, long time, right? By anyone's standards, it's a tremendous tzaddikus to allow that in the house. By the next morning, the father-in-law passed away.
Wow.
Also a tremendous person, but the point is, and it didn't happen to her, it happened to him. The point is, he was right. His point was, who knows who's supporting who? You never know which mitzvah you're going to do that's going to be the secret to it. That's my point here is, there are times that a Rebbeinu Shlom allows a person to extend his life or her life because he hopes that they're going to do certain things or because they have certain merits based on things that they did in the past or based on whatever it might be, and they have extra time in this world. Who knows which mitzvah it is that a person might do that will give them... Oftentimes, it's the mitzvah that is not really, it's at times scorned. We mentioned this last week, Parshas B'Shalach, it says there that Moshe, the whole Klal Yisrael, was going out and getting the money from Mitzrayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu was busy with the bones of Yosef. So the Chachamim say on this, Chacham Lev, they read the Pasuk, Chacham Lev Yigach Mitzvahs, that wise people grab mitzvahs. The question is asked, Rabbi Yashiv, other people ask this question. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one involved in a mitzvah. The Rebbeinu Shem gave a specific command that they should go and get money from Mitzrayim, to ransack Mitzrayim. They should go and ransack Mitzrayim. So they were also involved in a mitzvah. So how do we say on this, Chacham Levi Gach Mitzvah? Everybody else was busy by their own pursuits, and he was busy with Atzmas Yosef, with the bones of Yosef. They were both busy with mitzvahs. So Rabbi Yashiv answers a fascinating thing. He says, sometimes there are mitzvahs that are disregarded by others. They're ignored by others. So true, they were both involved in mitzvahs, but the Chacham, the wise person, is the one who goes to do the mitzvah that's neglected. You have a mitzvah that's neglected, and you pursue that mitzvah, you get extra merit from it. So all I'm trying to say here with this whole idea is that very often it's a mitzvah that's neglected, very often it's a mitzvah that other people don't view as one of the greater mitzvahs. It's not a very popular mitzvah. And yet, the people who are involved in them, there was a fellow once that I spoke to, and just being reminded of many different stories here, but there was a fellow that I was once speaking to, and he told me, he said, you know that family, they have tremendous success with a particular area of their life. And he said, you know why they have such success? And he said to me, because they take care of me, they invite me all the time. This person was a person who, not everybody realized the importance of Hachnasas Arachim for this person. And he said, no, this family has success because of this. Sometimes having guests over at your home is somebody who's successful, somebody who's wealthy, somebody who's famous, somebody who's this. But it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that having a person who's an ordinary person is any less of a mitzvah. Right? Maybe the more a person is tzaddik, you get more merit, but just that you gain more from it, you'll be able to tell others that you had them for the... Who said? And the same is with helping anybody. In any situation, you give money to a person. Sometimes it's the people who others neglect. And that could be the mitzvah that really saves you. Who knows who's supporting who? That's the message. So when the Rebbeinu Shalom gave them two mitzvahs, gave them Dam Pesach and Dam Mila, these were the mitzvahs that allowed them, according to our interpretation here, it allowed them to be extended in a time when they really, some of them should have died, they had the merit to stay alive longer and then go on to great things, the greatest generation in the history of Klal Yisrael, because of the merit of this mitzvah. Yes?
I was going to give that, perhaps I'm wrong, but what I thought was even a stronger argument, when they're at the Kriyas Yom Suf, the angels say, what's the difference between these and these? Really, the truth of the matter is the angels are, the argument with Hashem, the angels are winning the argument. Hashem just says, look, these are my people, I'm taking them through it. If we take the angels seriously,
You're saying it's another indication that the people were not necessarily the biggest tzaddikim in the world.
Right, 20%. Okay?
Okay.
20% were really...
Even the 20% had... yes, excellent. Another illustration of that. Terrific. Okay. Just getting back to our source sheet here. Again, under the Mishnah, we have the Bechor Shor. The Bechor Shor says that the Pesach, the fact that the Rebbeinu Shalom skipped over, is a simen lehatzala. It's a sign of the salvation. Sheitzilam b'shas amageifa. The mitzvah of eating the Pesach, the reason why we call it Pesach, we're trying to underscore, we're trying to publicize the fact that the Rebbeinu Shalom saved us in that sort of situation. And the Chinuch, the next Chinuch, also says that the purpose is to remember the great Nisim that Hashem did for us. So there's a lot, you know, just the concept of the Pesach in itself we discussed in the previous mitzvah of Shechting, the Pesach. There's a lot of that, obviously, that applies to the mitzvah of eating it as well. Not a lot, all of it, but just some of the ideas that we hadn't touched upon yet. Okay. If you turn to page 15, we're going to skip a little bit because... On page 14, we have two mitzvahs. I put both mitzvahs because it's from the same sefer. On page 15, we have the Sefer Noyam HaMitzvahs. If you look at, there's four columns on this page, correct? Okay, so in the first column, I underline the beginning of the mitzvahs, the sixth mitzvah, where he speaks about Mem Ayin as mitzvahs haseh, Lechol HaPesach, Leil Tezvav B'Nisan, Shenemar, Ba'ochlus HaBosar, Balayla Azeh. This is all things that we talked about. It's a mitzvah to eat the Karm Pesach on that night, and he goes through some of the ideas. If you go to column two, and you see in the margin there, there's a one. It says like this. First of all, it's important to know that while we don't have the Pesach today, and while we mention it during the Seder, but we do have something that we do eat that is instead of the Pesach. Anybody know what that is?
Matzah Mora, the sandwich, the Hillel
ate. Nope, not the sandwich, because the sandwich also is missing one of those. It's interesting, you know, it's a little confusing, because when Hillel would eat his sandwich, he would eat Pesach, matzah, and maror. Today, we only have matzah and maror. So we make a proclamation before we do it. We're doing this, Zecher L'Mikdash Kehillel. We're doing this in commemoration of what Hillel used to do. He used to eat, and then we say the words, and different Haggadahs have different versions. Some say Pesach, matzah, and maror. He used to eat Pesach, matzah, and maror. Others don't say it, probably because we're not eating Pesach Matzah Maror. We're only eating it as a memory. So do the words Pesach Matzah Maror, is that a reflection of what Hillel used to do, or is that a reflection of what we're doing now in commemoration of Hillel? But in any case, the point is, we do, that's not, so we're not eating the Pesach today. But there is something that we eat today that takes the place of Karban Pesach. Who knows what that is? Do we eat that?
We don't eat it.
You're not supposed to eat
it.
One of the reasons why you're not supposed to eat it is because to show that we don't have basar, but you don't want to designate that meat. In fact, by each of the others, matzah, when we say matzah zoo and maror zoo, this matzah and this maror, we actually, the minhag is to point to those things on the Seder plate, correct?
Yeah.
And by the way, in my house, when all the kids are jumping around, I always often say, I say, this is really a Pesach zoo. Okay, I'm sorry. But I'm sorry about that.
Is there a connection with eating the Avi Kamen? And
thank you, Rabbi Yaakov. Hold on, we'll get to that.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Right. So when it comes to Pesach zoo, the third one, we don't say, we don't point. The minhag is specifically not to point because we don't want to designate the way meat could become kachim. It could be set aside to be kachim, to be from Hegdish, right? So sanctified. So we do the way to do that is to designate it verbally and say this is for this carbon, this is for that carbon. So we don't want to say Pesach Zu as if to say this meat is, right? So we just look at it. We say Pesach Zu, this meat, and we have a commemoration by the shank bone that's burned. That's why specifically we use a chicken, because a chicken couldn't go on the Mizbeach anyway, so fine. But the point is that we do not eat today. In fact, there are sensitivities about not connecting too much the shank bone that we have on the Seder plate. So what is it that we do eat? So Yaakov tells us, thank you, Yaakov. You saved the dessert. Is the Afikoman. In what way is the Afikoman? Because the truth is, Afikoman was really the word, if you look in the Gemara, is the word for the actual Pesach that we ate. It's the last thing that you're supposed to eat. And you're supposed to eat, based on the Pesukim, you're supposed to eat the Karban Pesach. What they did is they had a meal beforehand and then ate the Pesach. Okay? And the Pesach was sort of the dessert that was supposed to be eaten on top of your meal while you were satiated. Right? And that's why you're not supposed to eat anything afterwards, etc. That came from the Greek word, correct?
Afi means after coming, after the meal.
Good, very good, very good. After the meal. So now, he's pointing out here by source one here in the second column. He says, "Ubizman hazeh achilas afi kaimon hu b'makom haPesach." And therefore, v'nechal al asoiva, it's eaten while a person is satiated. You have to eat it before chatzais. Okay, that's number one. You should just know that the afikoman is in the place of the Pesach. And here in source two, there he says idea number two is that Hashem Yisbarach is above all powers in the world. And now I'm reading from the underlined words. U'biyadai l'shadid hamarachis v'hafach Hashem Yisbarach mehebech el hebech mimazel ra l'teiva. The Rebbe Hashem has the ability to switch things and to flip it in a second. It's interesting, we're coming up to Purim. Purim, the theme is v'nahafachu, that it switched very quickly. He says, but here, the mitzvah of eating the Pesach is... part of the lesson of it is that the Rebbe Nishalim is entirely in control of everything, and he has the ability, therefore, to flip things around in a split second. So then he says, "Hainu lecho v'lizbaya v'lehenayis mimenu b'tzli asher tama yaiser taimi mivushal." That's why Hashem commands us to roast it, because the roasting, you get the full flavor out of the meat more so than cooked. That shows the extremes, right? The contrast. Because we were slaves, and then a few minutes later, we're sitting eating like kings. And many of the other Mefarshim say this about the fact that it has to be specifically roasted. That's the way of kings. We'll see that later in the next mitzvah as well. Okay, and then he mentions that we're expected to roast the whole animal so that it would still remain visible to the Mitzrayim. Yes? We want to make sure that the Mitzrayim still see, like we, like the joke we said last time. They turned in and said, "Oh my God!" Right? They saw the animal in its entirety, being almost entirety, being roasted. That's our Avodah Zarah. Okay. Then he says in number three here, he says, "V'hamitzvah le'achol eisai b'layla." The Rebbe Nishlam specifically asked us to eat it at night. Why? As is the usual way of the Sefer Noam and Mitzvahs, he picks different items, different details of the mitzvah, and gives it extra flavor. Hence the word, the name Noyama Mitzvah, the sweetness of the mitzvah. Yes? Every little detail of the mitzvah has some significance. The mitzvah is to eat it at night. Why? L'rames af shemira hamazel liyos chas v'shalom chayshech, even though the appearance is that the mazel for Klal Yisrael at that moment is darkness, v'afela Kilayla, just like it's a thick darkness, just like the night. La yomer noyash. He shouldn't say, "Let us." People should not say, "Let us give up hope." El yivtach b'shem Hashem yizbarach. So Rabbi Shalom said, "Look at this contrast. You're eating this meal. This meal will be a symbol of your freedom forever and ever, right? And you're doing it when in utter darkness. There can't be a greater contrast than that." And that's why he says, "V'zeh shomar akosa." That's why the pasuk says, "V'kacha teichlu aisai." This is how you should eat it. Masnechem chagurim, nalechem braglechem. You should eat it while you're girded, while you're ready, simply ready to run. I once heard, you know, in Alaska, there's a from Alaska to Russia, there's a like a 30-mile stretch of right, and they have what's it called? What strait?
The Bering Strait.
Bering Strait. So they have thick ice, and the thickness of winter, they actually ride trucks across the ice, oil trucks, and so on to transport things. And it's typically strong enough to hold the weight. But every once in a while, there's a truck that goes down, and it's very dangerous. So what they do is they drive the truck in such a way where the driver is trained that as soon as he senses some sort of movement that the truck is going down, he opens up his door and jumps out. Sort of like an eject button, but without having to, right? And several times, you know, drivers have been saved, but they actually drive with the door ajar and ready to jump out. I just, this idea of Pesach conjures up this image of somebody who's ready. They're sitting there waiting. You got your coat on. You got your, I don't know if they had coats on at that time, but you got everything ready. You're ready to leave. You're dressed. You got everything ready, and you're sitting down to a meal like as if you're about to jump out. And that's the idea. It's in the utter darkness. You're still in the darkness. You're still in the slavery, but you're absolutely ready to jump out at any moment. Kilaimer oid ma'at. Oid ma'at yivdenu Hashem Yisbarach Can't read that word. Mihatzareis. In just a moment, in just a fleeting moment, the Rebbeinu Shalom will save us from our tzareis. Ikru hula hamen Pesach hula Hashem. To remember, Pesach hula Hashem. Very important words. It says this in the Torah. What does it mean, Pesach hula Hashem? The salvation of Pesach. The Pesach represents the salvation. It's Lashem. Rak hu yizbarach ba'atzma yochol ha'ishyenu. Not only do we have the message of eating it in darkness, but the contrast with waiting and ready, that we should always remember that no matter how entrenched we are in the depths of the trials, in the depths of the difficulty, in the depths of the challenge, we're always ready at any moment to jump up and rid ourselves entirely of this situation, and also to remember Pesach Hul Hashem, that it's only the Ribbono Shel Olam that is able to save us, like it says in Mitzrayim, right underneath that underlined thing, it says, Ani v'lay malach, Ani v'lay shaliach, Ani v'lay saraf, Ani v'lay acher was the Ribbono Shel Olam and nobody else. Okay, and the next, we'll stop here, but the next few things also very, very fascinating. But it's a beautiful idea, number one, that the whole Pesach represented the Hatzalah, represented the salvation, and represented, as we mentioned earlier with our extra explanation, it represented extra compassion on the part of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But that is then an inspiration for us till this very day when we eat our Afikoman. Afikoman is even worse, because Afikoman, we don't even have the Pesach itself. In the darkness, in the proverbial darkness, many people over the course of the ages, many Yidden didn't have to actually imagine the darkness. They felt it, and they felt it bitterly and very acutely. And yet, wait, your position in life should always be that you're waiting in any moment, at a moment's notice, on high alert, that at a moment's notice everything could turn around and you could be in absolute freedom and be on the highest level of royalty in a split moment, and it's Pesach Hul Hashem, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam, and only the Ribbono Shel Olam that can cause that to happen.